Shalom, Mishpocha. Shalom, family. Mishpocha is a Hebrew word. It means family. And we're the Mishpocha, the family with a Jewish heart, made up of Jewish and non-Jewish people. That middle wall of separation has come down between Jew and Gentile to form one new man. Getting ready, Mishpocha, to blow the grandest shofar, the grandest trumpet in Zion. We want everyone everywhere to hear the good news. We want everyone everywhere to be red hot for the Messiah. My guest is red hot for the Messiah. The presence of God is so strong in this studio right now because he is giving revelation knowledge for the last of the last days of the understanding of what will happen in the world. And it's totally different than what most Christians have been taught. And as a matter of fact, a great deal of what Islam teaches is the opposite of what the Bible has to say, which makes someone from that background a very good candidate to be the Antichrist, different than what most Christians think, that the Antichrist will come out of the Roman Empire, which is Europe or the EU, which is throwing a lot of people off. Joel, I have to ask you a question. I have been to Israel many times. In fact, I'm an Israeli citizen as well as an American citizen. And all tour groups go to the Mosque of Omar on the Temple Mount. And they see things written on it in Arabic, but they don't have a clue what it says. What does it say?
That's an excellent question. Surrounding the inside of the Dome of the Rock that sits on the Temple Mount are passages from the Quran. And what they say are, far be it from Allah, far be it from God, that he should have a son. It is unbefitting of the majesty of God that he should have a son. Great blasphemies do you utter. It's a rebuke to Christians, literally, who believe that Jesus is the Son of God, circling this monument. Try to put this in context, Sid. This is the temple that for thousands of years it was the yearning of the Jewish people to see the Messiah come, where Anna and Simeon fasted and waited and longed to see the coming of the Messiah, where Jesus one day will sit and rule the earth, will rule the earth on the Davidic throne from the Temple Mount. Today there is a literal monument of defiance to that future reality that sits there and says that God has no son.
It's amazing that it's probably one of the more popular places for Christians to go. And just out of curiosity, why do you believe that Israel allows that that mosque to be on that holy place? And do you think it'll stay there?
Well, as far as will it stay there, certainly not forever, but at least for the time being. The difficulty with the Jewish people today is that what I see is that they've tended to embrace a bit of a Stockholm syndrome, a corporate Stockholm syndrome, if you will. They've internalized the hatred of the surrounding nations, and they live in fear. They want to have a place where they can raise their children, where they're not worried about their children being killed or blown up. And largely, they're willing to give away their right arm if they could have that peace. And so they don't want to stir the pot. They don't want to remove this blasphemous dome. Now, I'll tell you, Sid, I've been in dialogue with a few of the rabbis from the reformed Israeli Sanhedrin recently, and this really surprised me. One of the rabbis told me that he is convinced that the Dome of the Rock sits on the location of the Holies of Holies. And I was discussing with him the issue of rebuilding a Jewish temple, because it's the yearning of all of the religious Jews to sacrifice on the Temple Mount. And what this Sanhedrin rabbi is calling for, and what he said to me via email, is that he believes that the Dome of the Rock was actually built by the Caliph Omar as a house of prayer for Jews, whereas the Al-Aqsa Mosque that is, a bit off, but also on the Temple Mount, that was a mosque for Muslims. And literally, this Israeli Sanhedrin rabbi wants to see the Dome of the Rock become a house of prayer for all nations where Jews can begin sacrificing, and then the Al-Aqsa Mosque would be for Muslims. So that's a scenario that I had never considered, that perhaps...
Well, when we talk about a one-world religion, isn't that the groundwork for it?
Well, exactly. When you talk about a house of prayer for all nations where everyone can come and in unity worship, and what they always say is, well, we all worship the same God. You know, we can all come as Christians, as Muslims and Jews.
Well, we have that dynamic occurring, and at the same time, we have a dynamic of a great deal of the church is becoming what they call anti-Zionism. They say, we're not anti-Semitic, we're just anti-Zionism, and they don't know the two words are synonymous, Zionism and Jewish.
They're absolutely synonymous, and this is the reality, Sid. The spirit of the age is increasingly embracing an anti-Zionism. 2 years ago, there was a statement put out by evangelical leaders to President Bush, where they called on President Bush to push for a two-state solution. And the reason that they gave in the letter, and these are deans of major evangelical seminaries, prominent Christian leaders, names that you would recognize, and the reasons that they gave saying that we should establish a two-state solution, they said, because if we don't, we fear that more terrorism will come to the United States and to Israel. And throughout the Bible, God is clear where he stands on this political issue. In Joel 3, he says that he will literally come back and judge the nations because they take my people captive to the nations and because they divide up my land. This is a specific reason that he gives for his coming back, for his judgment. And the question that we have to ask is, are these evangelical leaders giving themselves over to the spirit of the age, or the spirit of the word? Are they giving themselves over to the fear of the Lord, or are they giving themselves over to the fear of terrorism?
Well, President Bush had a petition from 80 prominent evangelical leaders saying, we are in favor of the two-state solution, and that's probably why he pushed for it.
Exactly. He believes that this is the desire of the church, and yet it's brazenly unbiblical. It's the very antithesis of what the Bible teaches. And when discussing the coming of the Antichrist, we need to understand that the Bible is clear that the Antichrist, as we're trying to identify what will the system look like, the Bible tells us not just geography, not just some of the things that he will do. The Bible tells us about his theology. It tells us about his belief system. Certainly anti-Semitism, certainly anti-Zionism is a staple aspect of the Antichrist theology. But even beyond that, and this is essential, it says in 1 John 2:22 that the Antichrist would deny the Father and the Son. He would deny the Father and the Son. And when we...
That's basic Islam theology.
The very creed of Islam, the Shahada, as they call it, La ilaha illallah Muhammadan Rasulullah, there is no God other than Allah, not Yahweh, not the God of Israel, and Muhammad, not Jesus, is the final messenger. In a perfect, perfect creedal statement, Islam has enshrined Antichrist theology. These are the words that are whispered into the ear of every newborn Muslim child by the father. These are the words that are recited when someone wants to convert to Islam. It is the greatest Antichrist, the perfect definition of an Antichrist creed that the world has ever seen.
Now, and you know, according to what I've read, since 9/11... a number of Americans are converting to Islam. Why is that?
Well, you know, there's many, many different reasons, and some of them are depressing to get into. But, yeah, strangely, we have anywhere from 20 to 60,000 Americans every year are converting to Islam, many of them in prisons. But I'll tell you, Sid, Islam is one of the only systems of religion. You know, Paul the Apostle, he said that in the last days, men would be, and he gives this big list, they would be lovers of self, they would be undisciplined, unruly, all these real carnal descriptions. And then it finishes it off. It says they will have a form of godliness. So here you have a people that have a form of religiosity, but yet they're living carnal lives. Islam allows, for instance, a man in prison, it allows him to maintain his hatred of all things American. It allows him to maintain a racism. It allows him to maintain sort of a macho male pride. And you know, Muslims can have four wives and so on and so forth. They can have all of these things, but then fast and experience the demonic rush of false religiosity, and they can wear the religious uniform and the pride and the self-righteousness, believing that they're holy, but still embracing anti-Semitism, anti-Americanism, hatred of the infidels, hatred of the Jews, hatred of the Christians, belittling of women. They can embrace all of these things, you know, temporary marriages, all of these things that the Bible clearly speak about as sin. And they can practice these things and still believe themselves to be religious and have a form of godliness.
Well, you know, your paradigm that you're building on is the opposite of what most end-time Bible teachers teach. And the foundation is that the Antichrist will emerge from the Middle East and from Islam rather than from Europe. And just what you're explaining, what Islam teaches, is what the Antichrist would teach.
Precisely. You know, it says in Psalm 2, the famous psalm, when it speaks about the gathering of the nations, this gathering that's spoken of throughout the prophets, the gathering of the coalition of the Antichrist at the end of the age, who do they gather against? It says they gather against the Lord, against Yahweh, and against his Messiah, against the Son. And then the rest of the psalm, I believe, is literally a declaration and a call to the Islamic leaders of the world. And it rebukes the Islamic theology. It says, kiss the Son, lest he become angry, and you perish in his way. It is a clarion call to submit to acknowledge, and to do reverence to the Son. But it says the armies of the Antichrist will come specifically against the Father and the Son. It's the same thing that we see described as the doctrine.
Whoa, boy, I'm sorry, we're out of time. You really need us three DVDs titled Islam, the End Times. We're making it available for a donation of $30. If you would like to receive a complimentary copy of our bi-monthly teaching newsletter, materials catalog, or information about becoming Mishpucha or Chalitzim, write to me, Sid Roth, Post Office Box 1918, Brunswick, Georgia, 31521, or call our order-only line, 1-800-447-2697. To place a credit card order, call anytime, 1-800-447-2697. For all other calls, the number is 912-265-2500. That's 912-265-2500. For a cassette tape or CD of this week's broadcast, send a donation of $10 or more to Sid Roth, that's S-I-D-R-O-T-H, Post Office Box 1918, Brunswick, Georgia, 31521. To see our television show, It's Supernatural, or our archives, or subscribe to our radio and TV podcasts, look us up on the web at www.sidroth.org. That's www.sidroth.org.